I think it really came from teaching the first course that I taught in the Urban Education PhD program when I became a faculty member regularly, which was about 2009. I had been interested in, because I'm a labor historian, trained as a labor historian, I was always interested in the UFT strike of 1968, which is a pretty well-known, pretty famous event in New York City history. But until I taught the history of public education, I really hadn't sort of delved into it beyond a book or two.
Okay.
And so in deciding to teach it, which is what always happens, one of the joys about being a teacher is you get to sort of follow your interests in ways that you might not otherwise do. I read a bunch more stuff and I thought to myself, this is really a fascinating story, because I ended up coming to believe, after I taught it for the first time, that it was really, as one of the authors of one of the books described it, the strike that changed New York.
Okay.
And it was a strike that transformed racial and political relationships in New York City. And so it becomes a really important kind of signpost. Well, teaching in my own interest in New York City politics and New York City history, which, you know, I've lived here now over 40 years. Okay. I moved here from California in the mid-1970s, and I've always been deeply interested in the history of the city. I consider myself a political person, someone on the left, and so I've always been both troubled by and puzzled by that event, that strike, because I'm a labor historian and I identify with labor, and yet, to my mind, the way organized labor in the form of the United Federation of Teachers acted in that strike was among the worst examples of a union that was tone deaf to the needs of people of color and of poor communities, and it pitted groups that should have been close and connected in support of one another against one another, and that's a tragedy by any definition that I would use. That's a tragedy. So the inspiration was to quite literally figure it out, try to understand why that strike happened, and sort of what might have been done differently had there been opportunities to do that. And, you know, because I was interested, grew up in the 60s, I came to political consciousness in the 1960s, I was interested in sort of seeing that event, the 1968 strike, within the larger context of radical politics in the 1960s.
What was going on? Yeah.
But in 76, I was convinced I wanted to make socially relevant historical documentaries. And I did, and I made dramatic films for several years and learned how to make films and be a producer, and then had the very good fortune of connecting with Herbert Gutman, who was a distinguished professor here at the Graduate Center, though the Graduate Center used to be over on 42nd Street.
Okay.
And Herb and I started teaching a course together of labor history for labor leaders that Herb got NEH money for. And then after we did that for a couple of years, I had the idea to create the American Social History Project. And Herb and I founded the project in 1980. First person I hired was my next door neighbor now for 35 years, Josh Brown.
Okay. And
we got the project rolling. I had a big staff, all based at the Graduate Center, again, then over on 42nd Street. And I basically led the project for 18 years. We did the Who Built America textbook. We did the Who Built America CD-ROMs. We did the Who Built America videos. So those were all projects that grew out of the work we were doing on the American Social History Project. And that's how I found myself here, although again, we didn't move here till 2000. In 1998, the then president of the Graduate Center, Francis Deegan Horowitz, who was very impressed with the work of the Social History Project, the work we were doing in the New York City public schools, said to me, "Do you think you'd like to come and be a member of my administration?" And so I said yes. I had done the project for 18 years. I was ready and willing to turn the leadership over to Josh. And so in 98, I became the associate provost of the Graduate Center and doing work on as the Dean for Interdisciplinary Studies. And then I became the Vice President in 2004 and did that for 5 years. But while that was going on, she said to me, do you think you could create a program for our graduate students that would sort of train them in the ways in which you and your colleagues at the Social History Project have done all kinds of things with digital media? Mm-hmm. And I said, I'd like to try. And I put together a task force and created the Interactive Technology and Pedagogy Doctoral Certificate Program, which I've headed here for 15 years. Mm. And that program, plus the fact of my interest in getting more involved in scholarship, led to my appointment in 2004 to the doctoral faculty in urban education, a position I really didn't do much with mm-hmm. until I came onto the faculty when I gave up my administrative position in 2009. That's the first time I taught a history course in that program. Okay. So that's a very truncated version of how I got from there to here. Community control, of community power, black nationalism, and a whole range of ideologies that came embodied by, for example, the Black Panthers or Malcolm X, so that communities of color, which were overwhelmingly, obviously, poor, mm-hmm. tried to assert the need for their own control over the institutions in their community. It goes back to the early days of the War on Poverty, even the early 1960s. But what happens is those demands intensify over the course of the 1960s. And my understanding of both the UFT struggle over community control and the CUNY struggle for open admissions is those two events are in fact intimately connected. And I'm going to be writing a book and writing an analysis that really essentially argues that. That's the book I'm working on now. And some of that came out of my own research for my last book, Austerity Blues, the book that I co-authored with Mike Fabrikant, because I wrote the historical chapters in that book, and that led me to a kind of deep immersion in CUNY history. And in learning about CUNY history in detail, as opposed to sort of the kind of slightly superficial way in which a lot of people think about CUNY history, they know a few basic facts, mm-hmm. I came to understand that these two movements were in fact connected. Mm-hmm. Not only connected ideologically and having the same sort of ideas and sharing sort of consciousness about how important community control was, but that there were individuals who bridged both movements. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm finding really interesting, is drawing the threads between the two movements and connecting them through the work of individual activists. Mm. You know, one who is well known to people in New York, Al Vann, mm-hmm. who was both an assembly member and a city council member, was active in both, major person in the open admissions struggle at CUNY in 1967-68, but also major person involved in the community control struggle in Ocean Hill-Brownsville in 1968. So he's the same person fighting as he imagined it for the same ideas. Mm. You know, I've done a bunch of oral history interviews, and those oral history interviews are going to play a very large role in how I'm going to write this book. The way I'd put it, Jeff, is that the last project broadened my understanding mm-hmm. of how I was going to frame my new project, the one mm-hmm. that I'm working on now. In other words, I kind of always thought I was writing a book just about the community control struggles in the New York City public schools and what happened in those schools. But then I came to understand that it was a more interesting story to tell in a connected way, show the connections between K-12 education in the city and public higher education yeah. in the city. So that's what happened. It really modified and expanded my project.